Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. The topic of Nelson Mandela and the ANC and apartheid has been coming up quite a bit lately as people ask me stuff and as people see things. Americans have been propagandized into believing that Nelson Mandela was a saint, that the whites who ran apartheid were just a bunch of scum. And that pretty much has been the bullshit message that's gone out across the world, thanks to the local Jews in South Africa. What most white South Africans don't know is that all those decades that Jews, quotes, good Jews, were living inside South Africa, the good Jews were sending out the data and coming up with all the stuff that actually demonized the whites and laid the foundations for the destruction of white power. If you want to know why civilization has gone downhill in South Africa, the Jews have played a massive role in opening the doors to barbarism, primitivism, and all kinds of just rampant stupidity, evil, etc. A lady in America sent me some photos that she'd taken recently of Mandela on a billboard. I will still use those photos in a video, but I want to give you an idea of the kind of crap that Americans are exposed to. And if you look on the screen in front of you, on the top right, you'll see that sort of billboard type of image that Americans would see. Nelson Mandela, what can one person do? Inspiration. Yeah. Not really, actually. And if you look at the photo on the left of the screen there, that is a photo that I took in 2003. I took that on my first trip outside South Africa when I went to the Netherlands for a couple of days. And that photo that you see there, Nelson Mandela Children's Fund. I took that photo at Schiphol Airport in Holland. And actually, above that, if you look carefully, above that is actually a plastic jar and people are chucking coins in there. And it says, oh, future for the children of South Africa. So the Dutch are exposed to crap like this and they think it's the truth. So they think, oh no, we must help the children of South Africa, and this is the guy who can fix it, and so on. So the Dutch people, like decent white folks everywhere, they go and they chuck money in there in the mistaken belief that this is going to actually help kids in the future in South Africa. Meanwhile, this is just yet another bunch of nonsense that they are just using and exploiting the kindness of whites yet again to misdirect money and efforts away from whites to blacks. So whites are just being scammed so that blacks can benefit. And they stick on this image of Mandela, oh, he's such a kind old guy, and so forth. When I used to talk to my Jewish friend here in South Africa, and I didn't realize the extent to which he had already moved away from anything that was white friendly, because when I knew him and worked with him in the 1980s, this Jew was friendly to the whites, like all Jews, because they're all a bunch of two-faced scum. But here, after the year 2000, when I was talking to him again, because there was a time when I stopped talking to my Jewish friend, I think for about 10 years, when I got angry with him, and it could have been over politics, and I didn't talk to him for about 10 years. And then after I started my website and so forth, I started talking to him again. And this time he was very different, but I didn't really realize how different he was until the topic of Nelson Mandela came up one day. And one day, my Jewish friend says to me, "Oh, I've met Nelson Mandela in person." And of course, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, "Oh, Nelson Mandela, the scumbag or prime enemy that we had." And no normal white, no Boer would ever want to walk around and say, "Oh, I've met Nelson Mandela." But anyway, the Jew then says, "You know, I've met Nelson Mandela in person." And to my utter horror, he starts describing Nelson Mandela and how intelligent and awesome he is. And I'm absolutely gobsmacked when my Jewish friend starts talking about Nelson Mandela as if he has met God himself. I'm not joking with you. And if you actually watch those videos where I recorded the Jew, Ronnie Kasrils, and I asked him questions about Mandela and about Verwoerd, you'll actually hear him talk about Mandela in the same kind of terms. And it's on those videos that I did back then in 2020. I will be bringing some of my videos back because people will have forgotten some of the stuff that I've put out. And there was a half-Jew that I knew. And this half-Jew also told me one day, "Oh, I met Nelson Mandela." And it was the same shit. It was as if he'd met the Lord God himself. "Oh, this is a saint, you know, so amazing, so fantastic," as if he'd met Napoleon or Julius Caesar or someone like that, only perhaps even more awesome. And I couldn't understand this kind of garbage because Nelson Mandela is no friend of the whites. He's our prime enemy. And this kind of shocked me when my Jewish friend came up with this. And it was just one of many shocks that began to show me, you know what? This is not somebody who's on our side. The Jew has now quietly turned around and he's somebody else. The Jewish chameleon is now different. Different to what I knew him as back in 1989 when I worked with him. And so I want to warn you whites, especially you Americans, those of you who think, "Oh, Jews, Jews, they're loyal to America," you don't know what you're dealing with. All of these other people will change. They will change. And they'll change more and more. As you have more and more problems, they will change. And you'll start seeing how hideous and backstabbing they really are. The real Mandela is a lot different, and we will come back to the real Nelson Mandela. On the bottom right there, you'll see a little poster that was put together some years ago. And that is a poster that I got quite a time back. This was something that some students in Britain put this together, white students in Britain. They knew the truth. And that's what they put together. Hang Nelson Mandela and all the ANC terrorists. They are butchers. That's much, much closer to the truth. The real Mandela isn't that face of that old guy that you see there. The real Mandela was a hardcore commie who hated whites and wanted to slaughter them. And he was created by Jews, worked with Jews. And Jews helped him to conceive the ideas of how to slaughter the whites. We will return to this. We will return to the topic of why he was tossed in jail for 27 years. And even that was itself a miscarriage of justice because, as those students said, he should have been hanged. He and the Jews who were with him should have been hanged, but they weren't. That itself is a travesty of justice back in the 1960s. We'll return to that. But you get all this, "Oh, Nelson Mandela, it's like God has set foot on earth." Jesus is walking among us and his name is Nelson Mandela. That kind of garbage. So I can understand why the rest of you outside of South Africa, you've been inundated with all this claptrap from Jews and a bunch of liberal weaklings and useless fools. And so you think that this guy's a saint. This guy is anything but a saint. Maybe he's a leader for his own people, but he's definitely no friend of whites. And the notion that he should rule all of South Africa, that was a bunch of hocus pocus thought up by Jewry. So all of you outside of South Africa, you've been totally conditioned into believing that apartheid was some kind of evil system. That apartheid was, you know, almost like Hitler with the Jews. He's busy in South Africa, and the whites of South Africa are busy gassing the blacks and chopping them to pieces and stuff like that. This image that I put together based on an image someone else had done back in 2014, this is a lot closer to the truth. It asks the question, how many people did apartheid kill? And then you see there's Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd, 1948 to 1989, 41 years, 7,000 people were killed. And then you see 1994 to 2014, 20 years, and the total is 682,000. Now in this case, the numbers that they are quoting are crime statistics, okay? And I myself did an article on my original African crisis, which I need to find, which was based on decades worth of crime statistics. And I called it How Nelson Mandela Brought Crime and Murder to South Africa. Because as white power declined, you saw the murder rate shoot through the roof. Until you got to black rule, where this baby is just flying through the roof. So when it comes to crime, that will give you an idea of South Africa. That is the difference between white first world civilization versus what happens when the blacks take over. And now that we're in 2023, and next year it will be 30 years of this demented rule, I must tell you that very roughly, because they hide all the crime statistics and everything, but very roughly speaking, approximately 30,000 people get murdered in South Africa every year. The majority of those who are murdered are not white. Whites do make a portion of those who are murdered, but whites are a smaller portion. The blacks are busy slaughtering each other. They are killing each other like crazy. Blacks are killing Indians, blacks are killing coloureds, coloureds are killing blacks, etc. Blacks are killing blacks. Blacks killing blacks is actually the biggest number of people who get killed in South Africa. And because they fudge the statistics, etc., the rule of thumb, the rough number that is more or less consistent and has always been consistent, as much as they try to hide it, is that approximately 30,000 people are killed in South Africa every year due to crime. So if you take 30 years of 30,000 people being murdered every year, you are looking at 30 years of black rule has probably killed about 1 million people. That is not a bad estimate. That will be very close to the real estimate. And then of the 1 million people who've died under black rule, probably somewhere close to 100,000 of them are white. So these are about the best thumbsuck numbers that I can give you. The 100,000 comes from a discussion I had with my attorney in a show that I've not yet published. He was saying already that at least about 100,000 whites have been killed already. So this will give you an idea of the mayhem that has come thanks to black rule. So the white man on the left, Favourite, is demonized, and this black Jew-created black guy, he gets all the good publicity. He's the good guy, and the evil man is the guy on the left. No, 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 my friends. The greatest time of rule in South Africa was when that white man, the most critical role player in apartheid, when that guy ruled. That guy was awesome. The more I study history and science and I sit back and I ponder things, the more I want to tell you that humans are really straightforward to control and to set up. If you understand a few simple principles, a few straightforward simple principles, principles which the founding fathers of America already grasped to some degree back in 1776. If you understand a few simple principles and you just apply those principles, you'll see that it's the same as doing maths. It'll be the same as 1 plus 2 equals 3, 4 plus 2 equals 6. It's that simple. If you take human beings and you put them together, whether you put them together by the thousand or by the million or by the hundreds of millions or the billions, and you just mix those humans in certain ways, you will get certain outcomes. It's no different to somebody who knows chemistry, who knows that if you take chemical A and you mix chemical A with chemical B, that it will change color to green. But if you take chemical A and you mix it with chemical D, it's going to freaking explode. Humans are exactly like that. It's not a big mystery. If you take this group of humans and you make them 10% of the population, and then you get 70% of the humans and they're another group, and then you toss in another bunch to make up the remainder, you can predict a whole bunch of stuff. You'll be able to predict their IQs, you'll be able to predict whether the country is going to be a success, you'll be able to predict who's going to do this and who's going to do that. Humans are actually very simple to understand once you know a few basic things. And the guy who was trying to put this together and who understood this 100 years ago was Adolf Hitler. And the things that Hitler knew, the things that science was discovering in the mid-1800s, when you had guys like the Frenchman Gobineau writing about race and the implications of race. I've even found references to race in Napoleon's discussions with other Frenchmen. I need to return to that. Napoleon actually referred to Europeans as family, but the founding fathers of America and the leaders of America made sure that they brought in European people from Western Europe especially into America. They knew that it would result in something that would be awesome. And that thing worked for a long time. Now all of that stuff is out the window, and it's a case of bring in any old piece of garbage from anywhere in the third world, bring them in from Latin America, South America, freaking the center of Africa. Any old piece of crap can go to America. That's crazy shit, man. And these chemicals, let me tell you, humans as chemicals, you'll be able to see how they're going to vote. You can already see that the Democrats in America are already angling for a future where they are hoping that America is going to be non-white and that the fools are going to vote Democrat all the time. That's how the Democrats have angled their storyline for when they campaign in elections. Imagine how many Obamas, Kamala Harrises, and other fools you people are going to have in the future, in the not too distant future. The problem with the whites of Africa is that we weren't many. We were just a few, and we were here on this continent with these black people, and we started using these black people for our benefit. And we improved on them and assisted them, and we turned them into something. And we did that because there weren't that many of us. Of course, maybe we should have made it a state priority to have as many children as we possibly could. And we used to do that. If you look into the history of the Boers, you'll see that 100 years ago, families were much bigger. Of course, families were much bigger everywhere across the Western world. To have families of 10 and more children was not that uncommon. My mother comes from a family of seven. My father came from a family of six. But the truth is that we whites need to actually up that ante a lot more. We need to be like the Hutterites. Really, we need to be like the Hutterites so that we can double our population every 20 years. The truth of the matter is that the history of South Africa under apartheid has been totally distorted. Distorted and taken out of context, and Jews were rushing around. Jews with their liberal bum chums were running around, and they were distorting the role of the whites as fast as they could. So they saw the whites as Nazis, really, and I'm serious, and I'm going to return to that, and I'll show you that Jewry, the Jews in South Africa, saw apartheid and what the whites were going to do with apartheid, and they saw it as Nazism, as a type of Nazism. But I just want to quickly read an article. It's one of the best articles that I've ever seen that was ever published in an English newspaper. This article was published in the Sunday Independent on the 22nd of November 2009, and this is here in South Africa. And I published this thing on my Old African Crisis website. And this is a letter to the editor, and it's written by an Afrikaans guy living in the Cape. And it refers to an article, and it says, "Monari's article, a blatant racist attack." And the author of this is an Afrikaans guy called Barend Alberts in Saldanha Bay. So it starts with him referring to a black guy who'd written something about the parastatals in South Africa. A parastatal in American terminology is a utility company. So Eskom is a parastatal. Eskor is a parastatal. And there are lots of parastatals, the post office, etc. The SABC, the South African Broadcasting Corporation. All of these were parastatals that were created by the white government under apartheid. This was the way in which we could gather together capital and use the government's power to create a sort of semi company that actually can run chunks of South Africa's economy. Whites in Africa used parastatals to great effect. The same is true in Rhodesia. But the South African parastatals are very impressive. The things that they could do, they had a whole bunch of them, and they dealt with different aspects of the economy. So I want to read what Mr. Alberts wrote, and he says, "I consider Monari's article," and it is called "Something Rotten in Parastatals," that was published in the Sunday Independent on November the 12th, a blatant racist attack on the Afrikaner. Let me just pause there. You see, under apartheid, the whites, the Boers, the Afrikaners, played a huge role in these parastatals. Lots of Afrikaans people worked in these parastatals. I myself went into a parastatal after I'd been in the Navy for a while. I went and spent 2.5 years working for the then post office. And the post office controlled everything. It controlled not just the post office services itself, it controlled the post office savings bank. It even controlled the entire telephone network of South Africa. So Boer Afrikaners were very powerful in these parastatals. These parastatals were driven by mostly by Afrikaans people with some English in there. So he says, he considers it a blatant racist attack on the Afrikaner. We did not patronize the murky plexus of the tender gangland and did give a toss about corporate ethics. So what this Alberts guy is saying is that the whites, when the whites ran these parastatals, we were not busy with a bunch of corruption for tenders the way the blacks are doing, okay? The blacks have got their own corruption game going on behind the scenes, and the whites didn't engage in that. And he says, we did give a toss. A toss being we did care about corporate ethics. And he goes on to say, the claim that the post office and other weird parastatals were sub-states during the, quotes, corrupt apartheid years is unadulterated drivel. And I'll agree with that. I'll definitely agree with that. I must tell you, when I worked at the post office and I got into computers, we ran things so efficiently. So efficiently, and the whites always were very efficient. We didn't waste money. We looked after things. We worked very efficiently. I worked in Pretoria. And I must tell you, if I have to consider the efficiency of the whites, back in the early 1980s, when I worked in a parastatal like the post office, and I compare it to the blacks, even in the corporate world, even in the business world, and the wastage that I saw in banking and other parts of the business world later when blacks came to power, you just can't compare it. We whites, we were so efficient in these organizations. There were high standards, and whites were held to high standards. People didn't go around stealing and going and giving deals to their buddies, etc. The whites, especially the white Afrikaners, did give a shit about South Africa. They treated South Africa as if it was their personal property, and they gave a damn about everything that happened in it. And you can see it in every part of South Africa. Everywhere you go, whether it is the design of the roads and the highways or whatever they did, they gave a shit about it. In the same way that white Americans care about America and white Americans in America see to it that things are done properly and they don't tolerate crime and they don't tolerate corruption and that kind of thing. That's exactly how the whites were under apartheid. The notion that apartheid was some kind of system where everyone was doing backhanders and people were working with their bum chums and everybody was stealing money on the sly. That's a bunch of bullshit, okay? Apartheid was the most efficient that South Africa ever ran as. And when I was in the military and I was in Pretoria and I was working in different buildings and I saw how the generals and the admirals were running things, I must tell you, the standards of the whites in South Africa in the days of apartheid, in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, was very high. It was first world standards. And those first world standards were everywhere. It was in universities. It was in scientific institutions. In South Africa, we had a thing called the CSIR, That is a organization that basically drives the science of South Africa. That thing was dominated by whites. And the science and technology that came out of there was amazing. You can go and look at every single part of South Africa, whether it is Arms Corps, the arms manufacturing parastatal, East Corps, which was the iron industry in South Africa, any one of these, Sasol, which was the oil from coal parastatal, all of these things ran properly. The whites of South Africa were no different to the whites of Rhodesia, were no different to whites in any other country in the world. The notion that apartheid was some kind of criminal, scumbag, backhanding kind of thing, that's a bunch of shit that, okay? That's the same kind of crap as the kind of dirt that they try to pull on the Nazis or the fascists or anyone else. Whites everywhere are exactly the same. Whites give a shit and whites have got high standards. Period. All whites are like that. South Africa was no different. And the whites of South Africa took great pride in South Africa and in their achievements and in their work. And they held each other to very high standards. So the notion that the blacks inherited some fucking piece of corruption from the whites, that's a bunch of horseshit that. That's total horseshit. The corruption came when the blacks came. Until the blacks came, the corruption was minimal to zero. So anyway, let's continue, because Mr. Alberts writes quite a good letter. He writes one of the most kick-ass letters that I've ever seen a Afrikaans South African write. So he continues, he says, "Those parastatals were world class. They made massive contributions towards the sophisticated, modern and well-run country, the ANC," that's the black communists who run this country now, "that the ANC inherited. So much so that when Nelson Mandela signed on the dotted line, our infrastructure was among the world's top 20, the only country on the entire continent of Africa categorized as a first world country." And that's true. South Africa is the only state in the history of Africa that was ever on a par with Europe and America. And it was only on a par with Europe and America under white rule, especially during apartheid. So let's continue. "And now the ANC is demolishing them. The only parastatal still functioning like it used to is the post office." That was in 2009. The post office was still fine in 2009. Now in 2023, the post office is totally fucked. Totally fucked. It's gone bankrupt more than once. It's totally fucked. You can hardly even do anything there anymore. Totally and utterly broken. So let's continue. "Two-thirds of the road accident fund's payouts disappear into the pockets of lawyers." So there's another thing that's been totally ruined, okay? "The Industrial Development Corporation's sole purpose is to create wealth and jobs, but instead of doing so, they declared a huge profit in order to justify huge bonuses. The CEO paid himself 10 million rand, 48% more than last year. To hell with the poor." Let me pause there. Another thing about the whites of Southern Africa, doesn't matter what levels of jobs we held, right up to the prime ministers and the presidents, the salaries that whites drew, even when they were at the very top of society, the salaries that whites drew were a pittance compared to the rampant, insane salaries that blacks have been giving themselves under black rule. Blacks are giving themselves insane increases, tremendous salaries that will stun you. If you have to compare the frugality of whites in Africa, even at very high levels, compared to these blacks, there's just no comparison. You won't even believe the low salaries that everybody, all the whites, earned. Black rule has been a time of stealing and stealing, and everybody's in to steal. Everybody, right to the top. They are here for the gravy train. They're here to milk this country, left, right, and center. So let's continue, because Mr. Alberts gets even better. Mr. Alberts writes, "The apartheid government, in fact, did more for blacks than blacks ever did for themselves." Let me just reread that, because this is totally true. "The apartheid government, in fact, did more for blacks than blacks ever did for themselves. Think of all the schools, hospitals, colleges, universities, and other infrastructure constructed specially for blacks. Many in parts of the country where blacks have been living for the past 700 years without achieving anything. It translates into the ipso facto scenario that blacks with shiny heads and smart suits should go on their hands and knees thanking whites, because without our sense of responsibility and dedicated support, they would have been herd boys." Let me just go back and read this, because that paragraph is dead on the money. This man knows what he's talking about, and I will tell you, I agree with every word that he writes here. So let me go back to the beginning. "The apartheid government, in fact, did more for blacks than blacks ever did for themselves. Think of all the schools, hospitals, colleges, universities, and other infrastructure constructed specially for blacks. In many parts of the country where blacks have been living for the past 700 years without achieving anything, it translates into the ipso facto scenario that blacks with shiny heads and smart suits should go on their hands and knees thanking whites, because without our sense of responsibility and dedicated support, they would have been herd boys." In other words, they would have been living in huts herding goats and cattle. That's what he's basically saying, and I totally agree. Then it goes on further, and he says, "On the subject of social responsibility, after 1995, in other words, a year after the blacks took over the country, black people by the million left their traditional homelands that were 5,000 years behind, basically because they never had leaders to speak of, not even Nelson Mandela. Every time his plane and those of other ANC members came down to land at Cape Town Airport, they could see the squatter camps growing and growing. They knew the squatters were black, some of them family. They knew that incompetent traditional leaders forced them to live like animals, and they don't care and still don't." And that's the end of the letter to the editor. And that guy is just telling you how it is. That white man is telling you how it is. That the blacks don't have leaders, and even the black leaders don't give a shit about the blacks, actually. That's actually the truth. These leaders, these quotes, black leaders, are in it for themselves. They don't really give a crap. Everyone's busy feathering his own nest. Whatever the faults of the whites of Africa were, I'm going to tell you that the whites of Africa brought to these useless blacks the greatest progress they've ever known. We dragged them kicking and screaming out of huts and from herding goats and cattle. We brought them progress. We gave them tons of things that they never had before. Of course, we didn't do it because we loved them. We did it because we used them as our workers. And if it wasn't for us, they would still be living in huts. They'd still be herding goats and cattle. I can tell you that now. And their children would still be dying from all kinds of illnesses and malnutrition, and they'd starve to death every now and then when there's a bit of a drought, etc. But Mr. Alberts nails it. And that must be probably the last great letter to a South African newspaper ever written by a white person truthfully. That was in 2009. And let me just clarify, because that Mr. Alberts said that the blacks left their traditional homelands by the million, and he says homelands that were 5,000 years behind. In other words, he's saying that these blacks are living 5,000 years in the past. That is a lot like they said in Rhodesia. I remember in Rhodesia we used to say that the blacks are 10,000 years behind us. And to be honest with you, I actually think that when we say the blacks are 5,000 or 10,000 years behind us, we might even be giving them the benefit of the doubt. They might actually be more backward than that. But this Mr. Alberts clearly knows his thing, and I have no problem with what he wrote. But what I want to do in this video is, in this video, I want to put things in context. I want to show you a bunch of things and show you South Africa and what South Africa was like. But I'm going to show you from the point of view of reality, not from the point of view of distorted Jewish liberal garbage. I want to show you some things placed in the proper context, and then you'll be able to judge the actions of the whites for themselves and whether the whites of South Africa are guilty of any crime whatsoever. Let's start with the stuff that you are familiar with. The thing that the Jews and the liberals and the blacks screech about the most is the Sharpeville massacre. So I'm just reading from a screenshot that I took, which is a list of all the, quotes, massacres in South Africa. So this is from Wikipedia. This is just massacres from South Africa, and I've just grabbed the stuff in the period of more or less apartheid. And so the one massacre that you will have heard about endlessly is the Sharpeville massacre at the top of the list. And if you go and you look at the Sharpeville massacre, which occurred in 1960, it is 69 dead and 180 wounded. And I mean, Americans should look at some of this stuff and place it in the context of America. Consider school shootings and stuff. You have school shootings where more children and people are killed than in some of the massacres that you're about to see. Plus, I'm going to show you a couple of other things about these massacres. So let's start with the Sharpeville massacre, okay? 1960, 69 blacks killed, 180 wounded. I'm not going to go into what the Sharpeville massacre was, why it happened, nor am I going to show you at this point the violent intentions and the weapons that the blacks had at the Sharpeville massacre and how it was that they were killed, okay? You just hear the sob story, oh, they killed 69 blacks. What you don't know is that all those blacks, all those hundreds of blacks, went to go and kill police in a police station. Let's go to the next one, Soweto Uprising. 176 killed in 1976. This is now where the, quotes, children, where the children now protested apparently over learning Afrikaans. But rest assured, the ANC and all those people were behind the stuff. They organized the stuff. So far, those are massacres where the whites get the blame. Even though blacks are actually the shit stirrers behind this, there are blacks and commies and Jews behind these things. Go to 1983 Church Street bombing. Here the victims were whites. This actually happened a couple of blocks from where I lived, and two people that I worked with personally were killed in that thing. And that is a case of the blacks massacring whites, the Church Street bombing. Then there's the Durban car bomb. And I think this is also something that the blacks got up to. 5 killed, 27 wounded. Landmines planted on farm roads. Those are communist landmines. 23 to 25 people were killed due to landmines being planted on roads. Again, that's not the whites doing that. Then there's the Trojan Horse incident. This is where whites shot some blacks. 3 killed. Then there's the Langa massacre. So here it is, South African police shooting blacks at some funeral. But rest assured, there's all kinds of politics going on. This stuff is not as innocent as it looks. But anyway, 35 killed. Then Duncan Village massacre, 19 killed. Queenstown massacre, 14 killed. All of these are occurring in the 1980s. Amanzimtoti bombing. This again is where the blacks, the ANC and all those groups, are busy blowing up civilians. In this case, 5 civilians were killed, including 3 children. So this was not the government, this is the blacks. Lowveld massacre. This is blamed on the whites, 4 killed and a few disappeared. Then we go to Magoo's Bar Bomb. This is something that was done by the ANC again. So it's the blacks doing this. This is 3 killed and 69 wounded. Interestingly, the guy who did this is a guy called Robert McBride. I think he's a colored. And when the blacks came to power, they took this bomber and they made him a chief of police. They gave him a huge promotion. Of course, he's one of theirs. Let's go to the final one on this list, 1986 massacre. They blame this on the police and they say the police shot 20 to 25 people and over 60 were wounded. But the thing I want you to look at is you're looking at the list of massacres under apartheid. This is not all of them, but this is most of them, okay? This is the main stuff. And this took place between 1960 and 1986. And as you can see, that a good portion of these are not the whites killing the blacks, it's the blacks freaking planting bombs and killing whites. So this should show you that, you know, this is not a one-sided story. They are making trouble and stirring up trouble and trying to kill us. But the big takeaway from just this is that you should see that there's nothing really that's enormous about the Sharpeville massacre and the Soweto uprising. Those are like the worst, okay? But keep in mind that you are looking at a country where the white population is between 5 and 6 million and we've got tens of millions of blacks. So these numbers, if looked at and taken in their context, these numbers are not high. You cannot say that whites are running around slaughtering blacks. There are many shootings that occur in America regularly where more people are killed than in many of these massacres. I mean, take the Trojan Horse incident. 3 people got killed. And 3 people get killed and they call it a massacre. So these numbers should show you that to come and say that there are huge massacres that are taking place in South Africa, this is not true. This is not like Rwanda in the 1990s. Rwanda is a small country. There's like 7 million people or something there. And 1 million were slaughtered. Blacks slaughtered 1 million of their own. Or Zimbabwe, the former Rhodesia, where in the mid-1980s, the black government there slaughtered 30,000 blacks. You cannot compare these killings under apartheid with the scale of other violence that's occurred, even in a neighboring country like Zimbabwe. 30,000 dead. Now, the blacks have lied and tried to pretend that apartheid was really brutal. And I remember that once in Parliament, in the early years of black rule, that a black member of Parliament even tried to state that millions of blacks had died under apartheid. And That has never been repeated because that's total garbage. Total garbage. Liberal American academics who are no friends of the whites have studied the history of South Africa and concluded that in all the time of apartheid, the grand total number of blacks who were killed under apartheid were 20,000. But here's the part that everybody leaves out. What they don't tell you is that apartheid itself, when it was created, was not violent. It is nothing more than segregation. And that there is absolutely nothing violent about apartheid. Apartheid is not a violent system. If you go and you study the history, you'll see that early on, when whites were starting apartheid and working towards apartheid, you will see Jews and their assorted buddies, communists, liberals, running around grabbing all the non-whites, grabbing the Indians, grabbing the coloreds, grabbing the blacks, and gathering everybody together to form a mass coalition against the whites. And you'll see that they were protesting and pushing against apartheid until they could get Nelson Mandela and they formed a military wing and they set out to engage in mass slaughter. So what you think of as the quote violence of apartheid, there was no violence in apartheid. It is simply the state defending the existing system. In the same way that any state, whether it is America or any other state, goes and hunts down terrorists and people who are busy trying to kill other people, murder people, plant bombs, etc. All the quotes violence of apartheid comes from Jews and Mandela types and the armed wings of these different black organizations who are trying to kill whites and kill people inside the system. And they've also been taught by the Jews and the Russians, they've been taught how to go about creating protests, creating violence, creating disturbance to the peace, smashing things, breaking things, causing economic damage. If the blacks had just lived under apartheid in this segregated society, there would have been no violence. But instead, what you have are the Jews and the Russians and the commies trying to take this and use it as an excuse to start racial conflict and racial violence. We will return to the topic of Nelson Mandela and why he went to jail. He set out to massacre large numbers of people. His original plan called for the unleashing of 7,000 terrorists. They were going to plant bombs all across South Africa. They were going to put landmines all across South Africa. They were going to go on a huge killing spree. That's the real reason Nelson Mandela and the Jews with him were all arrested. There is nothing inherently violent in apartheid. Apartheid was segregation. It simply said, these people must live here, those people must live there. There was nothing about apartheid that said, we're going to go and machine gun these people down, we're going to kill these people here, etc., etc. Yes, the blacks didn't like being moved, and they didn't like being moved from this place to that place, but there was nothing under apartheid that basically said, we're going to go and just slaughter these people. That stuff wasn't there. So when it comes to the 20,000 people who died under apartheid, that is a very interesting figure because my own research and digging into that, I did bring this up in that talk that I gave called 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa. It could well be that most of the people who died, who quotes, died under apartheid, were actually murdered by the ANC, by the quotes, good blacks who now rule South Africa. They may have killed most of the 20,000 who did die. So there's a whole bunch of distortions about the history of South Africa and this thing called apartheid. Things taken out of context, other things merged into murky stuff and then presented to you as, oh, the whites are violent, the whites are violent. No. They're always leaving out their violence, their murders, their things that they're doing, all the bombs that they are planting, the people that they are killing, and all the things that they're doing. That in actual fact, probably most of the deaths that are taking place under apartheid are blacks killing other blacks because those blacks don't want to be ruled by these commie blacks, these communist blacks. Nelson Mandela is a communist. He's a violent terrorist. So you're just hearing a whole twisted version of what went on. All taken out of context. All taken out of context. You are not seeing how the blacks and others are smuggling bombs and weapons and hand grenades and all kinds of Russian weaponry into South Africa. And this is going on for years. I've got some other surprises for you. You'll be shocked by some of the things that happened in South Africa. Let me tell you what the whites' strategy really was and what the whites were trying to do. South Africa, by the 1960s, was one of the countries in the world with the highest standard of living. I think in the 1960s, I stand to be corrected, but I think that in the 1960s, South Africa, white South Africans, might even have had a higher standard of living than Americans. The whites of South Africa were determined to retain power, especially the Boers, the Afrikaners. They wanted to retain power. And they built up South Africa's military and they built up a strategy for South Africa. They realized that South Africa could easily end up with sanctions and could easily end up with lots and lots of problems. So they did a lot of work in building up their ability to defend South Africa, and they did many very interesting things. They stored away oil in mines. They worked out a strategic plan for how they would fight to retain control of South Africa right to the end. That was the plan. But then, with all the fighting that took place against the Portuguese and the Rhodesians, and as the Russians and the Cubans were coming along, etc., and as these other white countries fell, the South Africans then began to rethink what they are doing. And as the inevitable big conflict started approaching, they tried their best at all times to stay on the good side, the right side of the West, especially America and Britain. But they liaised with everybody. They spoke to the French, they spoke to the Germans, they had contact with everybody in Europe. The whites of South Africa, the Afrikaners, were constantly in touch with all the major Western countries, and they tried their best to be good representatives for the West in Africa. They saw their goal as resisting communism, resisting China and especially Russia, because Russia was behind most of the trouble that the Portuguese and Rhodesians and South Africans were facing. Russia was a big player, bringing entire shiploads of weapons to Africa by the 1980s. So the South Africans were trying their best to work with America and with the West and to tell the West what they're doing and to behave like a Western country. They, in their turn, were put under a lot of pressure from the West to do all kinds of impossible things, to conform to all kinds of impossible first world requirements. So even though it's a minority of whites and they're vastly outnumbered, they still have to act as if they are like America and they've got the kind of wealth and money to spend and waste on these other people. Despite these others being spiteful, being militant, and all the bad propaganda that's coming from Jews and liberals inside South Africa. The Jews and liberals constantly undermining the whites, telling the nastiest things they can about the whites overseas, and the blacks stirring up trouble at the behest of Jewry and Russians. The whites saw themselves as a force against communism, and the whites did end up clashing with the Russians and the Cubans on a big scale. They clashed with the Russians and the Cubans and other blacks in Angola, despite the fact that everybody was undermining them at home, and Jews at home are busy knifing them in the back and weakening their position all the time, while you still have got Jews like Ronnie Casrals and Joe Slovo who are openly fighting on the side of the blacks against the whites, while liaising with the Russians and getting Russian weapons, etc. Later, when I look at other stuff to do with more modern history, I will show you the extent to which the white South Africans went to not kill the blacks needlessly. There's a video that I did quite a long time ago called Decapitation: How the Boers Dealt with Violent Crowds of Blacks. In there you'll hear what my friend Gilbert told me. Gilbert was among the last young whites who ever fought against the blacks, and by then they were fighting in the townships, and he explained how the whites would deal with crowds so that the absolute minimum number of people get killed. And if you watch that video, you'll understand the tactics and you'll see what Gilbert was explaining. And I can tell you that in lots of other military books that I've read and looked at, where military officers and people from South Africa wrote about what they did, the military went to great lengths to just find key people that had to be killed, because if they didn't kill that person, then that person would make huge amounts of trouble. They treated everything almost like a police issue, where they've got to go and find one guy and be able to prove in court that this guy did this, and so on. And when they went and they specifically targeted people to kill them or attack them outside the country, these were people that they had studied. They knew this person is very influential, this person's very powerful, he's doing this, he's doing that, this thing is going to become a problem. And then they see, okay, we've just got to kill that guy. If we don't kill that guy, then, you know, he's going to be able to stir up so much trouble, we'll have huge problems. The South African military went to tremendous lengths to use minimum force all over the show. There is no ways in hell that you can accuse the white South Africans of an abuse of military power. You can never do that. There is no evidence that they are guilty of an abuse of military and police power. And what I want to do now is I want to show you the actual military power, a teeny weeny little bit of insight into the actual military power that the white South Africans had. And this is just a teeny weeny insight. This is not even the full extent of everything that they had. And if the whites of South Africa had really had a guts full of these blacks and they wanted to massacre, let me tell you, they could have killed the blacks by the millions. They could have killed the blacks by the millions, by the tens of millions. They had the means to do it, even though they themselves weren't a large number of people. They did have the technology to do it. They had the technology, they had the weapons, they had the professional military people whether it was soldiers or special forces or pilots or engineers or chemists or explosives experts. The white South Africans, despite being a minority, had a lot of military power. And if they had really wanted to kill these blacks, they had the weaponry to do it with. They could have wiped out the blacks by the hundreds of thousands with absolute ease. With absolute ease. If the white South Africans had wanted to kill the blacks by the millions, they could have done it with the greatest of ease. And all those blacks put together would not have even been able to touch them. Let me tell you, if the white South Africans under apartheid had wanted to massacre the blacks, it wouldn't have been 2 and 3 people here and there. It would have been 30,000, 40,000 here, 50,000 there. It would have been numbers like that. And it would have been quick. Would have been done in a couple of days. Wouldn't have been those piss-willy little numbers that you're seeing spread over decades. The white South Africans could have put these blacks into the ground with consummate ease. The blacks everywhere would have been fleeing for their lives. So the real question shouldn't be, oh, you know, how cruel was apartheid? They killed like 20,000. Let me tell you something. If the whites had wanted to kill the blacks, the whites would have killed 20,000 blacks in a morning. In a morning, without even breaking into a sweat. It wouldn't even have been something that would have required much of their force. If the white South Africans had wanted to kill 200,000 blacks in one day, they could have done it without a problem. All this other piss-willy stuff that you see and that you hear, everybody complaining about, the Jews complaining about, the blacks complaining about, all of that's a bunch of crap. If the whites had really wanted to land some punches on these blacks, they could have gone in there and mowed them down, and they had the weapons to do it with. They could have flattened these blacks by the hundreds of thousands in a very short space of time. They could have had hundreds of thousands dead in a single week if they had so chosen. I just want to discuss the whites of Africa a bit more, because after some thought, I thought to myself that really, the rest of you who don't live in Africa, there are things that you just don't perceive. You are so far removed from reality. And that may sound like a strange thing to say to you, but you are so far removed from the reality of race, and you don't have an idea of what it's going to be like when others become more dominant over you. And you also sit and criticize the whites of Africa on the basis of morality. This morality, that morality. The whites treated the blacks like this. The whites treated the blacks like that. And even when you go and look at the history of our race and why our race did things that we did, I'm realizing that people don't grasp the reality of why whites did certain things. And the more I look at our civilization and the rules of our civilization, the way we behave towards each other, the rules that we have in place for ourselves, and then some Jew or liberal shitbag comes along and they say to you, oh, you are so evil, you are doing this thing, you're so nasty. Let's take something simple like the death penalty. In our race, in our history, we have the death penalty for many reasons. We have executed people right throughout the history of our civilization. White people have always executed people. We've executed murderers, we've executed people for treason, and we've executed people for other various reasons as well. But we've always executed people. There's been a time where we've said, you know what, this person who is in our civilization, this person has committed a crime, this particular type of crime is not something we will accept. And we're going to execute you. So whether it is the Romans executing people with crucifixion, or whether it's them tossing people in front of lions, or whether it is the Gauls torturing someone to death, or whether we hang them, or whether it is the elite and upper class and we chop their heads off, go and look at European history. You'll see how many kings and queens have had their heads chopped off. And if you go and look at the Romans, you'll see that crucifixion is a specific type of punishment that is used when people are being really bad. It's not something that they just do for everyone. Our race has had harsh punishments, and we have those punishments for good reasons. And when you go and you look into the way that we lived and the problems of the time, you will begin to realize why we had those rules. Nowadays, in these days of super softness and super silliness, now Jews and liberal rat scum walk around and they say, oh, you know, you shouldn't be executing people. You should be giving them a chance to rehabilitate themselves. And maybe if you weren't so nasty to them, they wouldn't be killing people. And so you got all this other crap kind of bullshit, this garbage bullshit that has come out of these pieces of crap, these low-life, weak, pathetic pieces of crap in our civilization. And by doing what we're doing there, we are opening the doors to new nightmares. And you only have to look around you to see the kinds of things that have happened. And in South Africa, I must tell you, the amount of crime that has come out after allowing blacks to rule ourselves, that in and of itself is insane. But all of the rest of you, looking around yourselves, you'll see that's happening everywhere. I was just looking today at some film footage from America. More crimes. Every crime is a black man coming to rob someone in a store. Store owners having to shoot at blacks. Sometimes they kill them outright or they injure them. And I'm looking at that. There's America. You see an old white guy with a freaking shotgun defending his store. A white woman shooting a black dead as he's coming to rob the store. And I'm just looking at that and I'm saying to myself, there you can see, man. There you can see what's happening. You open the doors and these people have got behavior of their own kind that you cannot control. And you open that door and now you're going to see the nightmare that comes out of it. So let's return to Africa. We didn't have lots of money. We had to be very careful with our finances. This is especially true in a place like Rhodesia. Rhodesia had very limited requirements for allowing whites to come into Rhodesia. South Africa could bring in all kinds of whites and larger numbers of whites because South Africa as a state was bigger and it could take on more load. But a place like Rhodesia, for example, they had exceptionally strict requirements before whites could be allowed to come into Rhodesia. They couldn't allow anybody to come into Rhodesia who needed any kind of financial assistance from the government. This was very, very strict. When my parents went to Rhodesia, my father had a truck. The fact that there weren't many trucks in the country, etc., that allowed him to get into the country. Otherwise, they wouldn't have allowed him in. Rhodesia had extremely strict requirements for whites to get into Rhodesia because they were struggling to run the country. So the notion that these places are just rolling in money and everything's just easy and any old fool can come in, that is one of the reasons why less people went to Rhodesia than to South Africa. There were many whites who came from Britain and Europe who wanted to get into Rhodesia but who couldn't because the Rhodesian rules were that strict that if you get into Rhodesia, there's nobody helping you. The government doesn't have the ability to give you social security and all that kind of stuff. You don't get the dole in Rhodesia. You get up off your ass and you've got to be working from day one and looking after yourself. Whereas South Africa had a bigger setup, there were more jobs, things were more established, they could bring people in who aren't that productive and they could let them live there. So this is just a simple example of some of the differences and some of the reasons why things ended up the way they ended up. So Rhodesia, for example, had very limited budgets and things that it could do. It was a small colony, but a small colony that managed to fund itself and managed to pay its own bills. This by itself is a great achievement for a small colony. Take a look at the screen in front of you, and I'll show you a little bit of what the white South Africans had. Let's start in the top left there. That tank that you see there is called an olifant. That's Afrikaans for elephant. That is a modified British Centurion tank. So that is a modified tank that they built for themselves. Basically a British tank that they modified for use in heavy battle. So there's an example of some of their weaponry. That's some of their heavy weaponry. These tanks also fought against the Russians and the Cubans in Angola. So there's nothing there that the blacks would have been able to stop, okay? On the bottom left, those vehicles that you see there are known as rattles. The rattle is actually a very amazing weapon. It is actually a thing that was built, invented and built by the South Africans in the 1970s. It's actually a personnel carrier, an armored personnel carrier. But that thing was so successful, they modified that vehicle in so many ways that that vehicle that you see there, that became the best workhorse of the South African Army ever. That is an amazing vehicle. And the things that that vehicle went on to do, including fighting Russian tanks, this vehicle is the workhorse of the Army of South Africa of those times. The rattle is to the SADF, the South African Defense Force. The rattle is to the SADF the same as the Panzer IV was to the Wehrmacht. The Panzer IV was the workhorse. It didn't look that good. It wasn't that sexy, but it did freaking the vast majority of the fighting. The rattle is the same thing for South Africa. That thing went on to do things that it wasn't even designed to do originally. And it excelled at everything. It was really an amazing weapon. If you look on the top right, there's a photograph of the South African Air Force. This is just a tiny portion of the South African Air Force from the 1980s. These are Mirages, okay? There you can see all the Mirage jets, the French Mirage jets that are lined up there. And that is just a tiny part of the Air Force that the whites had. I think the Air Force in total, all the aircraft together, came to over 300 aircraft. They had freaking everything from Canberra bombers to jet aircraft known as Impalas, but the Impala was actually an Italian jet, so they had French jets, they had Italian jets, they had stacks of helicopters, all kinds of helicopters, they had transport planes, they had tons of stuff. The Air Force in its day was 75,000 people strong. That was the most professional, awesome air force that ever existed in Africa. All of those pilots were white men. They even flew in Angola and shot down MiGs over Angola. The photo in the bottom right, that is known as a Valkyrie. And that is actually a South African multiple rocket launcher. It was the South African answer to the Russian Stalin organ. Yes, Russian Stalin organs were in Angola and were firing at the whites in South Africa. So the whites came up with this thing which outclassed the Russian Stalin organ and kicked its ass. And this is just a little part of the SADF and the South African Air Force of that time. The South Africans produced all kinds of infantry weapons, everything from freaking mortars and machine guns, all kinds of pistols, rifles, you name it. They built all kinds of weaponry. The South Africans could build all kinds of bombs. They had bombs like napalm. In Rhodesia, we also used napalm a lot. Napalm is an awesome weapon. Napalm was invented by the Americans for Vietnam. Napalm is nasty and it's awesome. You drop napalm, it's like liquid fire. It falls on the ground, it explodes, it spreads everywhere. It sets people on fire, buildings on fire, and once it gets on you, you can't get it off. If napalm falls on you, it'll burn through your skin, etc., and you can't stop it. There's nothing you can do. Napalm is a nasty, nasty weapon, but it's awesome and it's cheap to produce. And if the South Africans had wanted, they could have gone to townships and just dropped freaking bomb loads of napalm and burned blacks and their homes and everything to pieces. The South Africans had rockets and missiles. They had all kinds of stuff. I'm not even showing you the artillery that they had. They had artillery that was better than the Russian artillery. They had artillery that was better than anything in the Western world, that could fire further than anything until now with the Ukraine war. The South Africans had all kinds of fantastic weapons, and they didn't have it now. They had it 40 years ago. They had it 40 years ago. 40 years ago, they could fire shells further than the Russians, further than the Americans, further than anyone else. Now I'm going to show you a short video, and you'll see a couple of things in action. So I'm just going to describe a couple of them quickly, just to show you the sophistication of some of the weapons that these South Africans had, and you will see them in action. It's a short video, and it'll give you a little bit of a feel for these weapons. So the first aircraft you will see are Mirages. The South Africans actually modified the Mirages and called them cheetahs. They modified them, made them sophisticated so that they could fight and shoot down MiG jets, piloted by Cubans, Germans, and East Europeans. The next weapon you'll see is that Valkyrie multiple rocket launcher. Then you'll see the Olifant tank, the modified Chieftain, the Olifant tank. Then you'll see the G4 artillery piece. Then the wheeled version of it is the G5 artillery piece. G5 self-propelled howitzer. That thing was amazing 40 years ago. There was nothing like it in the world. After that, you'll see a quick one. It's actually an eight-wheeled vehicle with a turret. It's very quick, so you might miss it. That thing is one of the most amazing weapons that came out of the fighting with the Russians and the Cubans. It's known as the Rooi Kat, the Red Cat. That thing was South Africa's answer to tank warfare in Africa. Nothing would have been able to match that thing. It came into the war too late, but that thing would have kicked everything's ass. That is also a German design. You're looking at a German-designed weapon for the South Africans. Eight wheels is a German thing. Then you'll see all the paratroopers and special forces that are jumping out of the aircraft. Then you'll see the infantry firing mortars. You'll also see some kind of rocket being launched. I'm not quite sure what that is. Then you'll see the rattles, but you'll see these rattles have got much bigger weapons on them. This is the Rattle 90. This is the rattle that can fight tanks. There's also another rattle that's got missiles on it that fights tanks as well. But this is the Rattle 90, the one with the big gun, the 90mm gun. Then you'll see the Rooi Valk attack helicopter, South Africa's own version of the Apache. And all of these weapons are either 100% built in South Africa or they are modified. So, in the case of the Mirage and the Cheetah, you're looking at something bought from France and that is modified. The Olifant is a British tank that's modified. But all these other things, like the Rattles, the Valkyries, the Rooi Valk, the Rooi Kat, all of those things are 100% built in South Africa, designed and built in South Africa. This was South Africa's attack helicopter, the Rooi Valk. That thing is a match for the American Apache. The Americans actually went to great lengths to stop this thing being sold worldwide and to curb this thing. This thing was cheaper than the Apache and on a par with the Apache attack helicopter. This thing is one of the greatest things that came out of South Africa. Between this thing and that Rooi Kat, that eight-wheeled tank fighting vehicle, these are first-class weapons, along with the G5 and the G4. Those things were top of the pops, able to take on the best of their kind in the world. The Rooi Valk has got high-speed machine guns. Not sure exactly the caliber. It can fire missiles. That thing can go and fight tanks and stuff. After that, you'll see a little jet coming in and shooting at the ground targets. That's an Impala. The name in South Africa is Impala, but in reality, it's an Italian jet. Then that stuff that you see flying through the air and it falls on the ground, and when it explodes, you see a whole line of explosions. That is demining equipment. You'll see stuff like that being used in Ukraine these days. South Africa had this 40 years ago. Those planes flying in formation look like mirages, French Mirage jets. You'll see those jets also flying with a much bigger plane. I'm not sure if that plane is for refueling or if that plane is electronic warfare. The vehicle that you then see is the Casper. That was the first fully mine-protected vehicle invented in Southern Africa. The Caspers also became legendary. They also carry troops and they've got heavy machine guns on them, but they claim to fame is that that thing can strike a landmine and it will never hurt or harm anyone inside that vehicle. That vehicle can hit a landmine can blow it up, and everybody inside will be totally fine. That thing was one of the first true 100% landmine-proof vehicles ever built. After that, you'll see the fantastic Rooi Kat again. That eight-wheeled tank fighter, that thing is amazing. You'll even see two of them.
Thank you.
So there you have it, a little bit of an overview of the SADF and the South African Air Force in the time of apartheid. That is the real army that existed. And that army was mostly white. There were some non-white units, but it was mostly pure white. And all that advanced equipment was used by whites. And it was totally professional. It was the greatest military power in all of Africa. And it did fight the Russians, Cubans, and blacks. But there are many other issues that can be discussed and will be discussed, like the military strategy, the political strategy, etc. And of course, I've mentioned that the reason whites can't kill their blacks is because we're dependent on the blacks. But here's the good news. The good news is that whites and blacks are parting company. And the blacks have been getting rid of whites, and the whites are managing to survive by themselves. Give this some time. And when whites and blacks have parted company more, then one day we'll be able to just do our own thing, because our dependency on them will largely disappear. And we're getting closer and closer to that, where we don't really need them, and we're looking after ourselves, and the things that they are supposed to do for us, they aren't, and they are taxing us while doing nothing for us. So the time is coming, where whites and blacks will one day be able to part company. You've not seen the last of the history of South Africa. After World War II, there were Americans and liberals who spoke about the end of history. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as the end of history. History is about struggle and strife and conflict and competition and so forth. And if you think that black rule is the end of the history of South Africa, you're in for some surprises. The Jews may have wanted to use South Africa as an example of, quotes, the Rainbow Nation. But let me tell you, this Rainbow Nation is going to go up in flames in time to come. And I just wanted to show you that if ever you hear all this guilt tripping about apartheid was so cruel, just remember, if the whites had wanted to take the blacks and put them into the ground, the whites had the means. They wouldn't have killed three blacks today and 3 years from now kill five blacks. If the whites had wanted to, they could have taken 100,000 or 400,000 blacks and buried them on one day. They had that ability. Don't let anybody ever tell you that the whites were miserable and mean. No, the whites bent over backwards to not have to kill the blacks. They did their utmost to carry out impossible requests from America and Britain and the rest of the West, to comply with impossible things that a small group of us just cannot afford to do. It's insane to do it. The good news is also that the blacks are totally useless, utterly worthless, and once we part company with them, we won't be needing them anymore. Then, my friends, the gloves can come off. And one day you might look back and you might say, apartheid, that was the time when the whites were so well behaved. They did their utmost to work with these people that are impossible to work with. You cannot work with the blacks on their terms. Their terms are completely unreasonable. Their requirements are impossible. They are useless. And the rest of you will discover these things yourself. If you think that apartheid was bloody, it's become bloodier under black rule. And the truth about the blacks is that most of the blacks that have ever died in South Africa, whether it's before the Boers, in the time of the Zulus, or whether it is now, most of the black deaths, the vast majority of blacks dying, are dying at the hands of other blacks. But one day, when the races part company, you're going to see something you're not expecting. When black and white part company, that might be the day when the white man's gloves finally do come off, and when they do, you're in for the shock of your life. We might not have those weapons that we had then, but we're not finished, not by a long shot. And if you think the loss of those weapons is the big thing, remember what Napoleon said: the moral is to the physical as 3 is to 1. In other words, it doesn't matter if you don't have the weapons. What's important is what is in your heart and your mind. If you're motivated, you'll get a lot done, even if you don't have the real equipment. As I keep telling all of you, you haven't seen the last of the Boers. And keep all these lessons in mind for yourselves. Let me tell you, if the white man has the will everywhere, the white man can throw diversity off like a man who's taking off his cloak. We can toss diversity onto the rubbish heap of history in short order if we're all motivated and determined. It is well within the capability of the white male.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, thank the whites.